My name is Michael Bailey, and you're listening to the EDP Formula One podcast. Here we go then, time to chat over the German Grand Prix with fabulous Fernando Alonso looking a class apart. Luckless Lewis Hamilton having to take another humbling, Jenson Button joyous at his return to form, and Sebastian Vettel valiantly trying to ignore the rules, only to be done in the end. Firstly, let me introduce this week's pod panel. I have Perry Hamilton. I haven't come up with a little pseudonym for you this time.
Oh,
Perry, I'm sorry. Welcome.
I'm very disappointed by that, but thank you. It's good to be here.
You see, the next time I do one, it'll be twice as good.
Well, you'll have had like three times as long to come up with one, so.
There you go. That's the key to it. That's what we're talking about. David Tillier is here, editor of gridwalk.tv. Good afternoon, David. How are you?
Yeah, pretty good. Enjoying the weather.
Aye, it's nice. I think it was raining last time we were all meeting, so.
Yeah.
Makes a change, doesn't it? And making his EDP F1 podcast debut, we have Ben Mouncer in the room helping me out.
Hello, Michael. Debut well? And swan song, I think.
Indeed. Yes, off to work on the football. Well, that's all Stoke call it.
Yeah. Rugby propaganda.
Yeah, you're not allowed to say anything too nasty, are you?
No, I won't. But I already have, so.
Yeah. Well, I hope it doesn't scupper your job. Otherwise, you can come back on here every week. No, I'm only joking. You'll be fine. Great stuff. Okay, well, Fernando Alonso, as I said, took his third win of the season, extended his drivers' championship lead, and I'm already sensing maybe him and his Ferrari are going to take some stopping. David, how did you take his performance at the weekend?
It was another sort of typical sort of Fernando. I mean, he's really becoming like probably the best driver on the grid, or clearly the best driver on the grid. I mean, a lot of us have thought it for a while, but now he's sort of starting to get to the point where he's demonstrating that he's got something else. It was a typical sort of Fernando performance. He was sort of very, very fast in places, very, very conservative in places, great in qualifying, managed to sort of keep everyone at bay and keep fast sort of consistently throughout the race.
I think the one thing we all know about Fernando is he'll get the most out of the car that he is presented with, which he did a real trick at Hockenheim with that. I'm kind of wondering, we've all kind of mentioned how bad the Ferrari was at the start of the season, Perry, but I mean, it was 1.5 seconds, I think, off the pole time in Melbourne. But apart from that, maybe, I mean, they won the second race, didn't they, in Malaysia? I think I've got that right. Was the car as much of a dog as we all thought it was, or were they playing games with us down at Maranello?
It's odd that you actually mentioned that, because one of the first things I was going to bring up was I don't think that car is as slow as they'd have us believe. I've been chatting with some friends of mine who watched the race, and it's one of the first things he said to me was, "Are you ever going to believe another word that comes out of Stefano Domenicali's mouth when he says, you know, we don't have the best car, the car's not that good, the car's quite slow." And Fernando Alonso comes out and goes, "Well, the car's only okay, the car's all right, it's not that good." Now, Fernando Alonso's a great driver. There are other great drivers out on the grid as well, who, if they had cars that were that much better, would be doing better races, would be doing better times, and would be getting better positions ahead of Alonso. Believe you me, that Ferrari car right now is quick. It was a dog at the beginning of the season, as Ferrari cars are at the beginning of every season. And yet, they've really dug in, they've made some great improvements, and the best thing about it is they've kept Fernando Alonso happy. You keep Fernando Alonso happy, and he's going to drive the wheels off of it. You let Fernando Alonso believe for 1 second that the team isn't giving him everything to help him win that championship, and he gets a little bit petulant, he throws his toys out of the pram, and he doesn't try so hard. Now, that may offend some Alonso fans there saying that, but I really believe that that's the feeling you get. You see the shrug of the shoulders and the raise of those gargantuan eyebrows, and he just sort of looks away with the side of his eyes and says, "Well, you know, the car wasn't where we needed to be." You don't see that now. He's focused, he's ready, he's eager, he's excited, and that car is going to really take some beating.
I think that's come though from there being a mutual respect between Alonso and Ferrari, and they've pulled together as a team. And Alonso has been the leader of that team, as Michael Schumacher was when he took over, when he moved to Ferrari from Benetton. It was a sinking ship, Ferrari, and he grasped the nettle, and so has Fernando Alonso. and now they're reaping the benefits from that.
They certainly are. If only Felipe Massa could have some of what Fernando was on, eh? And just get a little bit of the same kind of thing out of the car. We spoke after Silverstone. Obviously, it was Mark Webber's weekend that weekend, an epic, as you would probably say, David.
I'm not going to say it this week.
An epic effort from Webber, and it was just no pace from him this time out. It just didn't seem to quite feel right for him at Hockenheim. From going from where maybe, you know, Webber and Alonso were going to go head to head from here on in to battle it out, Alonso seems to have taken a step away from his nearest challenger.
Absolutely. Well, that's been the story of the season, isn't it, really? I mean, there seems to be two or three different drivers competing at the top. Obviously, in the last couple of races, Alonso seems to have upped his game and has been up at the top of the grid more regularly. But you really can't predict it. As he said, Mark Webber, bang on pace at Silverstone, but then comes into the next race and has a very low-key weekend.
But someone who didn't have a low-key weekend, gentlemen, Jenson Button, after a considerably low-key season, maybe apart from the opening race, Jenson back on form. It was a fantastic drive. He did seem to be on it for most of the weekend, has to be said, David. I know you're a bit of a Jenson fan, so I'm sure you'd have taken plenty of joy in what Jenson did, finishing second behind Alonso. What was it down to? Is it just a question of sticking a couple of bits on the car and all of a sudden he's happy?
With Jenson, you've got to have the perfect car. He's very much I think Alonso is probably quite similar, actually, in a way. Probably not to such a great degree. But Button needs a car that is perfectly set up for him and he's comfortable with. And if he feels confident, he will push it and push it and push it because he has that confidence. If he doesn't, then he just will be nowhere on pace because he can't feel like he can push the car forward, as opposed to Hamilton, for example, who can sort of push through that and has got probably slightly bigger how do we say this on a podcast?
Cajones?
Yeah, cajones. There we go. Good use of he will sort of push through it and will sort of get more out of the car, but Jenson obviously seems happy with whatever it is they've managed to do to sort of upgrade the car.
Theoretically, it was going to be a third place on the podium for Jenson when they crossed the line. Sebastian Vettel, who was very good at the weekend, I thought, very consistent, was second, having overtaken Jenson on sort of the last few laps with a move that took him off track to avoid contact, as he said. He then kept away from Jenson by pulling away off track, coming back on it in front of him and then carrying on. But the rules are pretty clear, aren't they? If you go off the track, you can't then gain an advantage from it.
Well, the rules are clear, but the one person who's not at fault here is Sebastian Vettel. He's made a very clear point. I couldn't see where you were. He wanted to get away cleanly. The fact that, the fact that they both drove away from that moment actually shows that he made the right decision. What I can't get over is the absolutely how they dropped the ball at Red Bull. Red Bull's known as one of the most cerebral teams in the paddock. They think their way through things. They're a very smart team. They're incredibly well managed. Now, are you telling me that everyone who is sitting in that garage is looking at that screen and seeing that pass? If there wasn't a single person who said, hang on a minute, he's off the track. I said it as soon as I saw the move. I sat there and I said, he's off the track. He can't overtake like that. Jensen's on the radio straight away. Vettel passed me off the track. Mm-hmm. McLaren say, yes, we know Jenson. The FIA are looking at it. What needs to happen right at that moment is Christian Horner gets on the radio and says, Seb, give him the place back. You've got two more laps. Take him at the next corner, or take him on the next lap. That way, you're guaranteed your position. If you just tell Seb to keep racing, and you know he's been passed, he's passed him off the track, that's only ever going to come down as a sanction. It was very clear from what you could see that he was out of line. I don't understand how Red Bull dropped the ball on that. It was absolutely baffling.
Exactly, especially considering the rules on this were reclassified at Silverstone, because we had an incident earlier in the season at Bahrain, where Rosberg and Hamilton had a bit of a scurry on track, and then there were no further ramifications. But before Silverstone, the rules were reclassified, so I agree with Perry. I mean, Red Bull should have had that at the front of their minds, and therefore they should have seen what was going to happen. But you said you noticed it straight away. The BBC commentators didn't actually notice it straight away, did they?
Well, David Coulthard didn't, yeah. But Edwards, Ben Edwards, when they showed the replay, said, I think he might be. And then David Coulthard obviously did a bit of backtracking. And I saw it and I thought, he's out, he's off the track. And then DC's there going, oh, great pass, smart move, using all of the runoff area to get past him. And I thought, well, David Coulthard's raced in a few more, you know, races than I have, so maybe he knows what he's talking about. But the more I saw the replay of it, the more I thought, no, do you know what? That's not done right. And even if, and I do mean this, I'm so jacked up about this. If there's even the sliver of doubt in Red Bull's mind, you give that place back because you're so much faster than Jensen. And all you've got to do is move over, let him go, and then sit on his exhaust. Those tyres are going to give way sooner or later. Yeah. And Seb would have got past and it would have stuck.
It was inevitable that Seb was going to get past.
Precisely.
So, but I was lucky enough that, because I was watching it on another TV channel, I had the fabulous Martin Brundle, and he picked up on it straight away.
Well, of course he did. He's Martin Brundle. He's faultless. He's absolutely faultless.
There you go.
What if Button would have still been ahead, but then would have gained advantage, but if he had run wide, but no change of position, what do you think the rules would have meant then?
I think at that point, as long as no one gains an advantage, I think you're okay. The bottom line is Button's ahead going into that corner, Button's ahead at the apex of that corner, Button's ahead as they're pulling out of that corner. If Button had had to run off of line but remained ahead at all time, even if Seb had the outside line, Button would not have gained a significant advantage. So, and that's the same thing. I mean, if Button's nose cone ended at Seb's side pod and, you know, Seb was taking that line, there's not that much of an advantage gained there. Button at that point should be the one who puts the brakes on and pulls out of that turn. He knows he's beat. But as far as Button's concerned, his nose cone's ahead, he's ahead, Seb's off the track. Now, you take it this way. You imagine that it's like a NASCAR track or something like that. And if you have a metal barrier 3 feet away from that curb, is Seb still going to make that pass? If that's not painted ground, if that's not artificial ground, if that's not artificial grass, if that's gravel, is Seb still going to make that pass? No, he's not. It's not part of the track. Unbelievable.
I think in a way Jensen was only as far over because he knew that Vettel was off the track anyway. I think he would have adjusted where he was as well.
Yeah, you can see that when once sort of Vettel is all the way off the track, Button realises he doesn't have to give Vettel the space that he needs, so he comes back to take his line. But all the way through that, Button was giving him the space that he needed.
And
it was only at that point where he could see that Vettel's car was off the track that you can see he does that slight adjustment, comes back online. So
it's a shame none of you can see the hand motions that
beautiful.
David was giving us there. We were getting some proper demonstrations of who was where and what was happening. So next time, when we do a video pod, we'll have to get that up again.
I'll bring some model cars next time. We can race them around the table.
Oh my goodness, that is happening most definitely. Okay, so yeah, so as a result, despite finishing second, was given a drive-through penalty retrospectively, which took him down to fifth.
Yeah.
Thank you. Which promoted Kimi Raikkonen up to third on the podium, third step on the podium. Yeah. Thank you.
That's right.
Another minor success for Lotus without bringing the success we all think their car should be delivering because they've got a quick car. Roman Grosjean wasn't really at the races most of this weekend. Didn't have one of his better showings. Good from Kimi, consistent, quick. And they were trialling a new fancy, what was it, concept double DRS.
Yep.
Completely different, really, to what Mercedes do, which we will probably see raced with possibly in Hungary, but
I think
probably
Eric
later.
Bulio said that it's going to be happening after the summer
The summer break. So hopefully that will make Lotus quick enough so they can qualify well, because I don't get it. I mean, I keep saying Kimi's going to win a race and it doesn't happen. I'm going to have to give up.
We've seen earlier in the season how important qualifying is. We've seen two cars which are inferior to the Lotus, the Williams and the Mercedes, win races when their drivers got pole position.
And when you go through the Constructors' Championship, Lotus are fourth, I believe. I think they're a point, is it, behind McLaren?
Yeah, Kimi's now ahead of Hamilton.
Kimi's ahead of Hamilton Drivers' Championship. Lotus are now the team that hasn't won, because everyone else, basically, at the top end of the Constructors' Championship, have won a race. That probably says a lot about their consistency, doesn't it, David, how they're turning it around?
Yeah, I mean, just look at 2010. You know, the reason that Vettel won the championship is he was consistent. You don't get anywhere by being sort of banzai all the time and having some good results and then some bad results. I mean, look at Maldonado. Yes, he's won a race, but You know, I think he's had something stupid like only 2 points finishes or something.
Every dog has its day.
I think he's got 28 points altogether.
Yeah, so
that's on top of my head, and then 25 of them. Obviously.
Yeah, he's had fewer points finishes than Senna. You know, and everyone's giving Senna abuse for not being on form, but in reality, he's being a lot more consistent. Consistent isn't always the most exciting thing in the world, but
just ask Nick Heidfeld.
Quick Nick.
Quick was
Nick.
He quick?
Not
he
really.
Was quick Nick. That's all you need to know.
I missed him in the Porsche Super Cup.
Oh, no. He was so quick. Is that right?
Maybe.
Physically. Didn't see him. Okay, so good old Hethel-backed Lotus. Maybe I'll predict Kimi to win in Hungary.
Yeah.
We can find that out in a few minutes.
Okay.
Maybe. How about then a look at Hingham? And the mighty Caterham, who will only be Hingham-backed come the other side of the summer break when they complete their move to Leigh Field.
Does that mean we'll stop talking about
them? No, of course not, Ben. What are you suggesting? Hethel-backed Norfolk Soul in the Caterham boys.
They'll still have the building, so it's kind of a link.
Exactly, yeah. It's a global sport, and they have a part of them in Norfolk, so it's good enough for me. I don't know what's good enough for them at the moment, though. This is the issue. Updates, a lot of updates, side pods, exhaust systems, rear of the car, wings.
I think they're down dates, really, aren't they, as opposed to updates, really?
Well, this is the problem. I mean, we saw it last year. They brought in the double diffuser a significant time after everyone else, and it took them 6 races to work out how it worked, effectively, which is understandable. They're not a big team. And when you're not getting dry running either, Perry, it doesn't make the job any easier, I suppose.
No, it doesn't, but I mean, in many ways, a lot of the lower down teams look at the rain as sort of a bit of a blessing in many ways, because the rain neutralises a lot of advantage. You can't run at such high speeds, everyone's on the same tyre, everyone's getting the same similar wear out of the tyre because the tyre's made to be more hard wearing. So that wet running, although great in a race, because it means you might actually see some spills up ahead of you in safety car, bunched everyone up, you might get some points. Not good for testing at all, because what you want to be doing is developing the car at race speed. You want to be developing it at its full throttle. We saw a great jump from, especially from Heikki, last race with his qualifying performance. You know, Silverstone, they did great. And, I mean, this race, a full second behind the 16th place guy, or even the 17th place guy in Q3, I mean, in Q1. What's happened there? You know, they were competitive. And then you see this rain comes in, wipes everything off, and suddenly there they are. I mean, it wasn't even that rainy in Q1. You know, it was just a bit cold, a bit, you know, possibly maybe a bit of dampness in the air.
Yeah.
You would expect, at least from the progression that had been made from the last race, to stay on top of that, push it forward, you'd expect more from Caterham.
I suppose it's the worst case scenario, really, isn't it? That it's raining in free practice, and then you've got to deliver a car with performance for qualifying, and then a beautifully sunny race. I mean, that's almost really going to expose the flaws in the time to prepare.
Yeah, I mean, it's really, really difficult for the teams, because they come, you know, they arrive at the track, and they start testing on the Friday, and they want to, you know, they might use Friday for a bit of testing new bits and pieces like Lotus did, but essentially they want to sort of refine the setup. They want to get to that perfect race setup, because of course the race setup is the qualifying setup, so they've got to find that balance. And the only way that they're going to do that is by pounding around the track after lap after lap after lap. And if you arrive on Friday and it's pouring down with rain, you can't get that many laps in, you can't get that much practice in, and you have no idea, where your car is. The only, saving grace is the fact that everybody is faced with the same conditions, so everyone has the same problems. It's just who is the luckiest come Sunday, and who has managed to get the right amount of information on the outlap. From the pits out to the grid, because they can then obviously put some adjustment in on before the start of the race.
Vitaly Petrov did have a decent enough race. He held off Bruno Senna, which, you know, a Caterham finishing ahead of any other car is still marked as a decent success at the moment.
Finished ahead of his teammate as well.
Indeed, he did. Yeah, he didn't qualify ahead of him, but he did finish ahead of him, which he's done for a few races now. Mm-hmm. Vitaly showing a few people what he can do. I know when he arrived at the team, they were very much expecting Heikki to be comfortably ahead of his teammate, as he did with Jarno last season. Bless old Jarno. I wonder what he's up to now.
Drinking wine and stuff. Right?
Yeah, is he? I hope so. He deserves it. Yeah. He deserves his
holding everyone up
time.
In the supermarket. Everyone's stuck behind him.
Come on, Perry. No, that's not the attitude. That is not the attitude. I mean, also, Heikki Kovalainen wasn't too far ahead of Charles Peake, I think it was, in the Marussia, but he did have two extra pit stops and a whole new nose cone. So maybe not too bad. As always, move on to the next race, see how that one goes.
Just quickly on Keita and Michael, I think obviously Kovalainen won his only race at Hungary with McLaren.
He did.
And Petrov won his first Formula 3000 race there at the Hungaroring, so... With the higher temperatures as well, which should suit the Caterham car, I think they could have a slightly better weekend.
Time to deliver on the predictions later on in the pod, Ben. Bringing
facts into the podcast. That's a new one.
I've been going along the bugle line of just telling lies. Let's move on. Quick. Okay, how about who else did we see? Well, we can tie this in with our highlights of the race, driver and team of the weekend. I have a feeling there is one team and a pair of drivers we haven't mentioned yet who had a fantastic weekend at Hockenheim. So, Ben, it's your debut. Why don't you lead us off with maybe your highlight? Highlight, team, driver, go for it.
Kimi Raikkonen's overtake on Paul de Rester, I think, was a great bit of racing, which lasted about three corners. incredibly exciting, and with the best man coming out on top, I think that's my highlight of the race.
Ah, good man. David, what have you got there?
Highlight for me was Hamilton overtaking Vettel, or unlapping himself.
Which Seb really didn't like.
Yeah, I thought it was brilliant. I mean, if you are faster, you're faster, fair enough. You're perfectly entitled to unlap yourself. But just the fact that he was unlapping himself on the person that was sort of battling for the lead. Lewis wasn't going to gain anything from it, really. But at the end of the day, Lewis has sort of got to die or go home kind of attitude. He's still going to go for it. Just a shame he didn't do the same to Alonso, because it would have been equally as funny. So,
well, let's just quickly talk about Lewis's race, shall we? I mean, it was a puncture, wasn't it? I think on the first lap that pretty much scuppered his race.
Massa lost his front wing. I think maybe colliding with a Sauber. I think it looked in one of the photographs, it looked like a Sauber was in front of him, but it might have been Grosjean. But there was just carbon fibre all over the place, and Lewis was the unlucky one that got a puncture from it. Everyone else managed to get through unscathed,
and that was a long way back to the pits as well, because that was going into the first corner, wasn't it? And from then on it was race over. I think he got back, which is when he had his little unlapping spell, and then retired with just sort of suspension and rear car holes.
Yeah,
things falling off.
Yeah, I think they decided to retire the car mainly because they was never going to get anything out of the race anyway. So it was easier to sort of stop the car and start afresh fresh for the next race and try and sort of forget about this weekend. It was like fastest guy on the track at one point, really sort of flying. It was quite comical.
Owed a little dollop of luck, Lewis, I think. Perry, we seem to be going through highlights, so what's your highlight?
Well, my highlight again was Lewis, but not really one specific moment. I was angry enough to almost throw something at the television when he hits his puncture on his first lap.
This does happen every week.
Yeah. When he hits his puncture on his first lap and he's driving around, and they play a little bit of team radio, and you just heard Lewis go, "This is it, guys. We should retire. We should call it in. We should retire." And I just thought, are you kidding me?
Nigel Mansell wouldn't have done that.
You are paid obscene amounts of money to drive a car around a track very fast, and when you are on form, there is no one quicker than Lewis Hamilton. When he has the pit between his teeth and he is charging, that's a terrifying sight to see in your rearview mirrors. Just ask Vettel. and what I absolutely loved was he came into the pits, and I just thought, if he drives into that pit nose first, I swear to God, I'm going on the next plane to Germany, I'm going to go slap him. And they whacked the tyres on and they sent him out, and he charged and he went, and I thought, good on you. Because you didn't hear what the reply was from the team. You didn't hear if the team said back to him and said, pull your socks up. Because it just sounded a bit like the Lewis of old, the bit of the whole, nothing's going my way, and it's a bit petulant, it's a bit childish. And, I just thought, is that really the way this race is going to go? No, as you said, they stuck him out and they sent him back out there, and he was flying for a little bit, as you say, fastest man on the track. Now, fair enough, the decision to retire him was a smart one, because he was never going to get anything out of it. Save that gearbox, save the engine, save all of that, don't risk any collisions.
that's fair enough. McLaren can do that at the moment because you're at the halfway stage. So many more points available after the summer, midsummer break. That's, you know, that really is, they're not shooting themselves in the foot with that. But just to see Lewis go out there and actually race, even though he knew he was racing probably for nothing, still did it fast enough. But for me, and especially after that little line of "we should retire," I thought, there's no way you're giving up. And then he went back out, and that for me was a great highlight, to actually see some real steel in a driver. It was good.
Your highlight after Silverstone was, I think, the 2.9 second McLaren pit stop.
They had a really quick one in this race as well, didn't they?
A second. Mm. 2.4 seconds for a pit stop is a joke.
Something like 2.391 or something, actually. Yeah, it was very...
Did I hear the stat right that they practiced 800 pit stops a day?
What they were saying.
Did I hear that correctly? Yeah. That is insane. I'm struggling to think of something that I could do 800 times a day without being forced at gunpoint.
You did see how they were doing pit stops at the start of the season, though, didn't you?
Well,
did kind of.
And if they're only taking 2.9 seconds.
Well, why don't this doesn't take long, does it? Yeah. And any smart aleck that wants to tweet me and say you breathe 800 times a day, go ahead, because I don't know if that's true, but I'll find out.
I think I drink 800 cups of tea a day.
So. Well, you're British, so what
do you expect? Yeah, got to be done. Driver and team of the weekend, gentlemen. Keep it short, because I don't want to run over time. He says, look at me being all assertive.
I'm going to chip in with Kobayashi for a great drive in the race.
Beautifully done, indeed. Sauber was the team I was referring to earlier. They did have a fantastic week. Good to see Kamui Kobayashi back on form. He's been a bit lost.
Overshadowed, I think, of it.
Yeah,
by Perez.
But all we talk about with Perez is how good his tyres are.
Yeah.
That's the main talking point with Perez, is boy really looks after his tyres. So, of course, he's going to come in quite high. When you talk about people who are passing, and people who are making those moves, and the people that you don't want to see in your rear view mirrors, you know, Kobayashi's one, Maldonado's the other, and for two very different reasons. I fully agree with you, not in terms of driver, but team for me of the weekend was Sauber. Both guys in very high points finishes. Kobayashi's best of the season after Vettel's pushed back to fifth place. So Kobayashi coming in fourth, I think.
Yep.
Yeah. Best of the season for him. Absolutely great. But he's not my driver of the weekend. I'll come to that in a minute after.
And he had some more Banzai overtakes as well.
It was. So,
back of sort of Kobayashi of old. So that was good fun to watch.
He'll be due another YouTube video, won't he? Another one with. So, David, what do you reckon?
Drive of the day for me was Perez, actually.
Yeah, good.
He was, you know, to start where he started and finish where he finished, you've got to have a good race. I mean, yes, he's good on his tyres, but he must have been fast as well. Because there are a lot of quick people around him, and a lot of people around him that were doing quick times and quick races and were racing well. So, yeah, I think solid effort for him. If it wasn't for Perez, I'd probably say that Button might be the driver of the day after that.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that he lost second place sort of means that he's not my driver of the day. and I think he deserved to lose second place, unfortunately.
Fair enough. Sauber is your team, good show?
Yeah, probably, I'd say. It's no other team excelled with both cars. So I think Sauber sort of evened out across both cars, probably the best team.
I was going to say Sauber, but I'll say McLaren just to helping Jensen out a bit.
Fair enough.
And give a bit of balance.
Jensen, yeah. Appreciate that. Yeah. Well, Force India had a very good weekend. Nico Hülkenberg as well did okay, although he probably got a bit annoyed with being overtaken on the Sunday. I think that was more due to they had good qualifying pace, but they didn't quite have it in the race, which, to be fair, Nico Hülkenberg actually said before they were lining up on the Sunday. Driver, isn't it?
Driver for me is Jensen. Absolutely great, coming from a little further back, strong drive, very hard to keep Sebastian Vettel behind you. He did it very well for a good couple of laps, and so yeah, as far as I'm concerned, very much deserves at least a podium, which is what he got out of it. The fact that it's second for him is only going to boost him a little bit more, really. So
yeah, I mean,
great drive from Jensen. Really good to see him and the car working in unison. But as you say, David, there's that window. I mean, when he was world champion with Braun, you know, that window was so wide that you could fit a car into that window because the car was so good. The window's much narrower with McLaren, but you get the car in that window, Jensen shows what he can do with it.
Yeah, and I don't think he deserved to lose second place in the race because he was driving badly.
No.
He deserved to lose second place because Vettel was quicker and he had a quicker car. That's sort of, I thought I should probably sort of quantify that. It was not because I thought he was driving badly towards the end of the race, he was still quick.
If Vettel had kept it together, he would have taken it.
It was inevitable, I think. with that silly DRS zone that they've got at Germany.
The one overtaking place in the entire...
They've proved in previous years that they don't need it anyway, so you know, I think they should look at the tracks they've got DRS on and take it out for the ones that don't need it.
I suppose it was the Nürburgring last year, wasn't it? Mm. So it was their first stab at it.
Yeah.
So.
Imagine the DRS at the old Hockenheim, that would have been exciting.
4 miles of DRS. Okay, a very brief run round of the GP2 series, which rocked up at Hockenheim, of course, as well. The Norfolk Outlets, Guido van der Garde had a fifth in the feature race from pole, so probably was hoping for better, but he took second in the sprint race. That was something of a return to form for him after a disappointing Silverstone. Good news for Caterham Racing as well, that helped take them back above iSport in the team's championship. James Calado won the sprint race for Lotus GP, who topped the team's championship. Esteban Gutierrez is third in the driver's standings, with Calado fifth, and they sandwich Guido van der Garde in fourth. That's pretty much the top echelons for the old Norfolk boys in GP2. They will, of course, be heading for the Hungaroring this weekend. We've got back-to-back races, so they will be following their bigger brothers, if you will, and I suppose we should have a look then, shouldn't we, at Hungary. Ben, you were making bold predictions about Caterham's success, but you now
very
have
very slight improvements, not
very
bold predictions.
That's very guarded, actually. You're going to have to get you off the fence. Predictions then for the race. What? Tell us something you think is going to happen and what you're expecting.
Well, Hungary is a very interesting track. It's quite unique, obviously. The closest thing to it is, Monaco is very similar in the way the cars sit up. I think we could see Lotus maybe get their first win here. If
you can tell he's a newbie, I've been saying that all season. I'm only joking. Let's hope so.
Yeah, Grosjean though.
Mm-hmm.
I think he'll bounce back. I mean, Kimi's had the momentum for the last couple of races, but I think Grosjean has shown remarkable pace, what people expected from him. And I think this everything could come together for him this weekend. He's had a bit of bad luck the last couple of weekends. And made a couple of mistakes as well.
As he does.
I think this weekend, Roman Grosjean is going to win his first Formula One race.
I'd love it if it happens. I'm a major Grosjean fan.
And Caterham to get their first points.
Oh, well, he's not going to get 100%. It's all right.
Good 50%
maximum ceiling on that one.
Joke.
No, too late now. It's on tape. You can't get it.
We'll edit that joke bit out. Yeah.
It's not a joke. David.
I think the safe bet would be to say Alonso's going to win.
Someone had to do it.
But I think the track will probably suit Red Bull, I would have thought. Although it depends on how this engine mapping fiasco is going to affect their performance.
Do you want to go into that now? A little bit?
What, the bit that I don't understand?
Like I did that.
They're banning something. There we go.
Yeah. I think they... Engine mapping, let's have a go, is a way of the cars being on the throttle when they're not actually using the throttle to drive forward. It's more a case of using gases to come out of the back of the car to help with the downforce. Now, last year they were able to do that to their heart's content. This year they restricted it heavily, and that obviously lessened the downforce on the cars. However, I believe the way Red Bull were doing it, they were still using a 5% amount or something similar.
It was minimising wheel spin and able to pump more gases through the engine, therefore helping the aerodynamic benefits the car.
Can all the technical talk.
Didn't read that.
Can all the technical talk there, gents. The bottom line is what's happened here is, once again, Red Bull have found a very good way to make their car go faster, and every other team on the grid didn't think of it first and want the time to catch up so they can do it as well. This is what happens. Red Bull think ahead of everyone else. Adrian Newey implements it and everyone goes, we've never seen that before and it's working too well, so it must be illegal. The FIA gets involved, everything gets suspended until there's a resolution. As soon as there's a resolution and they say yay in favour of it, suddenly all the other teams come out and the next race they've all got it on the car. Lo and behold. If the FIA comes out and says, no, you're absolutely, you can't do that at all, then all the other teams dance around and go, nah, we told you so. And then the next race, when Red Bull still win, every other team goes, oh, well, that must have not been that much of a big deal then. You know, it's annoying because it always happens to Red Bull. The only other time that I've seen it not happen is when McLaren introduced the F-duct last year. And Red Bull were one of the first teams to come out and go, ah, hang on a minute, you're not allowed to do that because that's... And as soon as they said, oh, no, they can do that, every other team had it. It's just politics. That's all it is.
Politics and money. It's perfect. Summation.
Are we talking about
nicely the done, world, Ben? Nicely done. You'd have been throwing something at a television.
I would have been throwing stuff at the television.
If the television was on. Anyway, there was a protest before the race on Sunday at this Red Bull thing that was possibly allowed, but probably wasn't allowed. They were allowed to run it in the race, but the FIA are about to issue a guidance, a decision one way or the other to allow or not to allow in time for Hungary. I reckon they'll say no and carry on, but we have to see, I suppose. That's a decision for them to make, and you'll probably be right in the end, Perry. They'll either all have it or they won't have it in time for Spa, which is the other side of the summer break, the last weekend of August. There are two weeks when they shut down completely.
It's three.
Three weeks.
Teams have to turn off all their computers.
Turn off everything. But you are allowed to move.
Yeah, 3 weeks they're off, but it's 2 weeks that they're banned from doing anything. Yeah. You can pick whether that's the last 2 weeks or the first 2 weeks, but it has to be, can't check emails.
It's going to be a week at the beginning and a week at the end. Can you have that middle week off? Is that allowed?
I don't know.
Okay, well, let's get on that. Let's find out. Let's make some phone calls.
Although Perry will think Red Bull will be doing something.
Oh, of course they will be.
Is that really 2 weeks?
Red Bull's going to do all their stuff in this last 2 weeks so that every other team doesn't have time to catch up. Because if Red Bull do it in the first 2 weeks, in the last 2 weeks, every other team will be going, what's Red Bull done? Let's nick it. That's basically what every other team does.
Well, I was emailing with Tom Webb this morning from Caterham, so I'll email him and ask him.
Have a word. He'll know. Yeah. Tom knows everything, I've pretty much decided. We got a prediction from you, didn't we, David? I think
I was a bit vague, but I'll go with Alonso because it's going to...
That's right, Alonso.
I want to win one.
Oh, he's gone for the favourite. Perry, then.
Jenson Button. Great improvements on the McLaren. McLaren's looking quick. He's got a race under his belt. He wants those points. He wants to not be the lost cause. He doesn't want to be in the back in the shadows at McLaren. He's going to come out guns blazing. Jenson Button.
It's a bit of a rotation this year. So I think Sebastian Vettel's control was quite impressive this week, and I think he'll be a little bit aggrieved at what happened to him, even though he's completely correct in Germany. I think he might well win this weekend in Hungary. So put your money on Kimi. Yeah?
Because you've not
because I've not backed Kimi. Yeah, exactly. Right. This will be his time, I'm sure. Brilliant. Well, I think we better end it there. There we go for another pod. We will be back in 7 days' time with a review of the action in Hungary, although it will be without me, as I sun myself in the at the Olympics. I might have got some sleep. I hope so. But don't forget, you can follow all the news and goings-on with Lotus and Caterham throughout the season at edp24.co.uk/F1. You can also read at the site my weekly Formula 1 column, which runs in the EDP every Wednesday and is online come Thursday. Comments, questions, feedback, get in touch with us. It'll always be good to hear from you. Twitter is the best course of action. You can get me at Michael J. Bailey. Perry?
At PedHD56.
David?
At Gridwalk.
And Ben?
At Ben Mouncer.
Beautifully done. There we go. We are on iTunes. You can subscribe to the podcast there. You can also find a link to the podcast at edp24.co.uk/F1podcast. Thanks as always to my panel, to Perry, David and Ben. Thank you all for listening, and we will be back the other side of Hungary. Goodbye for now.